Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a special Thursday edition of Pollock and Thurston. John Pollock and Brandon Thurston with you. Moments after we went off the air on Wednesday, I think Brandon and I realized we would be back the next day because the huge lawsuit is what is going to be on the docket today, along with multiple guests joining us. And Brandon, we have got a 82-page complaint filed on Wednesday in the Baltimore County Circuit Court. And in essence, as you were just telling me off the air, this really is a history of the Ring Boy scandal in these 82 pages with some horrific allegations that get very specific from these five John Does. And we'll state right off the top, certainly giving people fair warning that there is going to be graphic descriptions of child abuse throughout this show. So I want to make that very clear right off the top, because I think it is important to get into some of the graphic incidents that are outlined in this case. But it's, you know, a lot of you know, if you have studied the Ring Boy case, you know a lot about this, but it will still I think shock you when you are reading some of the allegations that are outlined in this 82-page complaint.
Yeah, they definitely did their research. There's references to shoot interviews where basically they're backing up their case of here's all these people who worked there at the time who have done interviews in public since then, and they talk about suspecting or having knowledge that there was abuse happening. All of the allegations of abuse are directed towards Mel Phillips, the former ring announcer. And of course, Mel Phillips died in, was it 2012?
Yes.
So the defendants in this case are Vince McMahon, Linda McMahon, WWE, and TKO as well has been named, as a defendant. Should we take the frequently asked question off the top here. Why are so Vince and Linda, of course, were the lead executives of the World Wrestling Federation at the time. They were in charge of the company. They're allegedly negligent for allowing this abuse to happen. But people are going to wonder, why is WWE and their parent company TKO being sued in this case?
Yeah. And this is essentially looking at the negligence on behalf of the WWE. What was known at that time throughout Mel Phillips was worked for the company throughout the 70s, throughout the 80s, and then into the 90s before he was let go first in 1988, which was brought to the attention by Phil Mushnick in his March 1992 article, but was kind of lost to history. The fact that there was this approximate 6-week period that he has gone and then brought back to the company. And essentially, this is going to get to the heart of the matter of what was known by Vince and Linda McMahon that allowed this predator, for lack of a better term, to run rampant and be in this position, not just as the ring announcer, that would have been very visual if you were a consumer at the time, but also overseeing all of these ring boys that were, you know, they fall into these patterns that you could see of this predator, and now having these five John Does that are coming forward with just heinous allegations.
Yeah. What I'm getting at as far as why WWE and its now parent company TKO are named as defendants here is this is alleged, this abuse is alleged to have happened in the course of then the WF's business. It's not just that Mel Phillips was allegedly abusing children in his neighborhood on his own free time, but was doing it in the course of operating the ring crew and then you know, abusing these boys at the venue allegedly and taking them to hotels afterward as well.
We're going to have several guests joining us on this special Thursday edition of Pollock and Thurston, and we are going to get to our first guest right away. He is a partner at DiCello Levitt, who is one of the attorneys that is representing the five John Does, the ex WWF ring boys. Greg Gutzler joins us here on the program. Greg, thank you very much for making time for us today to come on and explain this case for people that maybe have not been able to go through the 82 pages or are semi-aware of the Ring Boy scandal. I'll start with sort of when this case came to your attention across your desk and learning of this, and kind of give us a time period of how long this lead up was to Wednesday's filing.
Right. Well, thank you and nice to meet you. So this has been, we've been investigating this for months. We were approached by several Ring Boys who I think felt empowered by a shift in the culture of our country, as well as most importantly, the recent revelations regarding Vince and the culture of corruption at the WWE. We detail this in our complaint, where we talk about the myriad allegations against Vince, the hush payments that were made, how that was investigated with respect to TKO and WWE, and what was going on at the company. So we've been investigating it for months. And if you look at sexual abuse, what you see is that most sexual abuse goes unreported entirely. And then if you look at the small percentage of sexual abuse that is reported, you often have years and years of what they call delayed disclosure. And that's because of the cultural barriers, the fear and the shame and the intimidation of companies like WWE. And so why is it coming up now? It's coming up now because they finally felt as though it was a safe place where they could come forward, because Vince is at least ostensibly no longer in power. And they think that with the new ownership, perhaps there will be, with the regime change, hopefully a new philosophy of recognizing what went wrong in the past, acknowledging it, and making it right.
And thanks for joining us, Greg. I wanted to point out too that some people might point out that, well, look, these abuses are alleged to have happened in the 80s. It's now 2024. Is there a statute of limitations that would null a lawsuit like this? But I understand, let me know if I'm getting this right, the Child Victims Act of 2023 in Maryland basically removes the statute of limitations when it comes to sex abuse, even in the case of negligence, which is what's being alleged against the defendants here. Am I right about that?
That is correct. And we are in Maryland, where each of our John Does was in fact abused on multiple occasions. And that is correct. And what the Maryland legislature did is they recognized the science and the psychology that goes into trauma victims having delayed disclosure. So that's why the Maryland CVA, the Child Victims Act, is how it is. There it is. And it does recognize what these young men and young women will go through. In our case, we have 5 John Doe Ring Boys, and we're already being contacted by more people.
I find it interesting that, you know, you do have the 5 John Does. Was this a progression? Was this a group effort in terms of them coming forward together? Because I think you look at cases like this, there is a certain strength in numbers. And for these 5, I'm kind of just curious of like their ability to come forward these years later, if they were somewhat in concert with one another about seeing this common cause and now being the time.
Yeah. So first of all, it's a great question. They were not in concert with one another. We've been doing our investigation, so they are separate. They are not in concert whatsoever. We brought them in one case because, yes, there's strength in numbers in terms of being able to withstand what you know will be the inevitable besmirchment of their reputation, just attacking them in every way, using the machinery. And you know it's happened in the past how the WWE has treated survivors of any type of abuse, not just sexual, but it could be employment issues. There's been a lot of cases here. So they were cognizant of the issues, especially with the recent developments in which people have come forward. And Janelle Grant was probably the lightning rod for really opening up the fact that they could come forward and tell their truth. So over the last few months, with the revelations of Janelle Grant, the hush money payments, Vince being removed, and really finding out more and more what Vince and Linda knew, their involvement in knowing about the Ring Boys, at least as early as the early 1980s. So you have now revelations where, when you think about how you look at life or how you look at a lawsuit, you really do put pieces together. And sometimes it takes a while to say, oh my goodness, I now realize what has occurred and what did occur and how it occurred and who was involved. And so it is most certainly going to be a gradual progression of knowledge, of fortifying your knowledge of the position and what really happened. And that really occurred here in the last few months, when you saw more of the reporting on Janelle Grant and the other hush payments by Vince McMahon.
And Greg, I'd like to give you a chance to respond to the comment that we got from Jessica Rosenberg, who's the attorney for Vince McMahon. She gave us a comment yesterday where she went after Phil Mushnick, who people will know is a New York Post columnist who had been going back to 1992, has been reporting on things, including the Ring Boy scandal. And she said more than 30 years ago, the columnist Phil Mushnick tried to make headlines with these same false claims. Those allegations were never proven and ultimately became the subject of a defamation lawsuit against Mr. Mushnick. The negligence claims against Mr. McMahon that were asserted today, which is yesterday, rely on the same absurd, defamatory, and utterly meritless statements by Mr. Mushnick. We will vigorously defend Mr. McMahon and are confident the court will find that these claims are untrue and unfounded. So just your thoughts in response to that.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. She's a great lawyer at one of the best law firms in the world, and she's doing her job for a very powerful, very wealthy client. And I understand she has to take that position on behalf of her client. But if you read the 81-page complaint, you are going to see multiple facts, myriad facts, dozens of facts that have nothing to do with Phil Mushnick. So what do we have? We have the fact that you had Mel Phillips shuttling young boys in plain sight in front of WWE executives and wrestlers from state to state. You have him in plain sight staying in hotel rooms with young boys. You have in plain sight Mel Phillips engaging in sexual foot fetishes in the ring in front of people, in the locker room in front of wrestlers and executives. He was even provided his own private dressing room in certain areas. You have the FBI videotape where the FBI said, the behavioral science unit said, this is consistent with pedophilia and sexual foot fetishes. You have Vince McMahon never denying that he told people that Mel Phillips had a peculiar and unnatural interest in young boys. You have the fact that Vince and Linda McMahon fired Mel Phillips in 1988 for engaging in the improper activities with young boys and hired him back with the caveat of steer clear of the kids, the clear acknowledgement that they knew that Mel Phillips engaged improper activities with young boys. It was there in plain sight. And anybody who has a child or anybody with a moral compass would recognize when you put all of these facts together, you've got a major problem. And this person should not be hanging around young boys, certainly with the aura and the power of being affiliated with the WWE in a public-facing role as the ring announcer. So when you look at all of these things, this has very little to do or nothing to do with Phil Mushnick. And I should note that the defamation lawsuit, truth is a defense, and Phil Mushnick and the New York Post paid $0 to the WWE. They walked away from that case because what they knew is that Mushnick told the truth and there was ample other evidence outside of what Mushnick reported that showed this is absolutely true. And the WWE and Vince and Linda McMahon knew it. And you also have the testimony of at least a dozen wrestlers and executives that talked about seeing it in plain sight and telling Vince McMahon. And he said, I'll take care of it. So you've got a lot of facts, but I do appreciate counsel who's one of the greatest attorneys around, no doubt. But she's doing her job, and I respect that, and I appreciate the fact that she had a comment. It's just off the mark. It misses all the evidence in the complaint. It's just not right.
And it's striking looking at what the FBI was looking into in 1993. It sounds like they were coming close to bringing charges against Mel Phillips, who has now passed away. Did the FBI drop the ball here and not bringing him to trial for sex abuse?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know. My understanding, and I don't know if this is right. My understanding is that they decided to forego the sexual abuse charges against Mel and try to flip him to go after Vince and the WWE on the steroid charges. So I think that they made a decision. I don't have definitive evidence of that, but I have heard that. And it does make a bit of sense. There's also the possibility that some of the victims were too afraid to come forward. And that harkens back to the point about the statute of limitations and the Maryland Child Victims Act. It goes to the issue of it's really hard to disclose sexual abuse, especially as a young boy against a very, very powerful corporation, powerful people who you know have a ruthless grip on power. And you could see how they ran the company. Very sharp elbows.
Greg, given your own history, one of the aspects to a case like this is being able to take what is a very dark story, and sometimes you can get really deep into details and how you can illustrate this to a public to fully understand what is the core of this story. And sometimes it is a name and a face being attached to this. I think that was part of the reason the Janelle Grant case had such resonance with people, was just this was not just a idea. This was a woman that has been victimized. In the case of this one, you know, going through these 82 pages, it's supported by photos, which I found to be very powerful. Like sometimes, like 82 pages, it's a lot for people to digest. There's some horrific language, but sometimes just the first of all, the decision to include the photos, I think like that is, it sort of brings it to just your average reader that this is real life and these are real people. And sometimes it's very powerful just to have these images attached to a case.
Absolutely. I think that the public at large sometimes likes to ignore sexual abuse because, quite frankly, it's really painful. It's painful to think that you could have a child or a parent or a sibling that may have been subjected to these types of things. And you see the photos there. These are children. They were impressionable, vulnerable children who saw the WWF back in the day as their dream playing out in reality. Heel versus babyface. Babyface versus heel, good versus bad, America versus other countries. And they really did the morality arc, and they really knew how to play that story arc. And so you look at the pictures, and it brings it home. These are real people. And it's easy in a vacuum, if you just see a name, John Doe, to assign some motive to that person and say, well, they're doing it for this reason or that reason. The reason we're here is they want the truth to be told. They want to be a beacon of hope for people in the future, and to stand up for other people who have been hurt. And that's the truth. And when you get to know these people, you will say, these are people whose lives were ruined. We need to take this seriously, and we hope the WWE will also.
Yeah, and as we know, Vince is being investigated by the federal government, according to a report in February regarding sex trafficking and sexual assault allegations. We've, you know, figured that that's probably related to allegations that various women have made against him personally of sexual assault and sex trafficking. But is there a possibility? And I think about this in the context of Janelle Grant, making her petition to Dr. Kolker and the mention of RICO charges here. I wonder is it possible that RICO could be a part of what even the federal government is looking at concerning criminal charges? I don't know if that would bring you to speculate, but just your thoughts on that.
Well, I would be speculating based on this particular fact pattern, but generally speaking, when you have two or more acts like this, predicate acts, you may have wire fraud, money laundering, things of that nature, other crimes, the government often brings RICO charges, and that's what is very, very prevalent in these cases. I certainly don't know exactly what the federal government is investigating. We could speculate, but I don't know. But you will often see RICO charges as a part of this type of enterprise where there are multiple acts, illegal acts.
Has there been any, it's only a day removed from the suit being filed. Has there been any outreach from TKO or WWE at this point yet? Has there been any type of response?
Right. So I can't answer that.
Okay.
More than just saying that you read a statement, Brandon, and that's been in the public. That's what I can say.
And that's just from the McMahon side. We've reached out to WNTKO. We've not gotten a response as of yet.
Understood. So that's all I can answer that question.
Again, knowing that this is just the day removed, have you had a chance to speak to any of the John Does and just where they are at after this suit has been filed? Like, obviously, this is a long road to be able to come forth with these allegations and being able to see this suit see the light of day, and sort of I imagine both maybe a relief but also very re-traumatizing to endure what is, you know, decades old incidents that occurred to each of the five.
Well, you asked the question exactly correctly. I won't talk about communications I've had with them that may be of a legally privileged nature, but I can tell you that this has been a really painful journey. And in some ways, stepping forward and having their truth be heard was empowering. It was also incredibly re-traumatizing, incredibly painful. And it really does bring to the forefront the things that happened to them and how it's affected their lives. So it's really a complex issue when you have sexual abuse survivors. And whether it happened yesterday or 50 years ago, there are very deep wounds and scars that never heal, and they're going through that right now. So I did check in with each of them, and my heart really goes out to them. They're really good people who've been really hurt, and I'm hoping to represent them the best that I can.
We'll let you go in just a second, Greg. You've been very generous with your time. What are we looking at in terms of like the next steps that we should be watching for after the complaint is filed? Can you give us any type of a roadmap to the best of your estimation?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And you're going to hear the "it depends." And I'm sorry, but that's the way it goes. You could see a variety of different things that happen. I actually couldn't give you a roadmap. I could give you about 17 different permutations, which I think will be very boring and very legalese. So there are many permutations, many different paths. We don't know what's going to happen. So I really can't answer your question any better than it depends on a lot of different things. But I can tell you that we have had other victims come forward, other witnesses come forward. And what you see in these cases is you will see the floodgates open where people who have knowledge, who have been sitting back, who are also afraid, even if they're not victims, they're going to come forward with their truth, with their pictures, their documents, their emails. And that's how these things come together, because the truth comes out and people want to get on the side of doing the right thing for the most part.
And just one final question is, as people are coming forward, like we've certainly seen this in the case of Vince McMahon, like this history of non-disclosure agreements, is that an area you're actively navigating that this would extend to potential victims as well in the Ring Boy scandal?
So we're not aware of any NDAs with Ring Boys. And in fact, because they were underage, they could not have, in fact, entered into an enforceable contract, nor were they asked to, because they were shuttled around so much by Mel Phillips. But so, no, we don't see NDAs with respect to our plaintiffs being an issue. But there certainly could be fact witnesses, executives that have knowledge as to what was going on, who will try to hide behind an NDA to not tell the truth.
All right. Well, Greg, we will park it there. I really appreciate you joining us. I hope we can continue this dialogue at a later date. And, you know, we appreciate you coming on to kind of break down this case. It's extremely important, and I think a lot of people will appreciate your insight into the entire lead up to this and where this goes next.
Thank you. I appreciate you looking into it and having me on today. So thank you.
Thanks a lot, Greg. Coming up this month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you three editions of Rewind Away, beginning with New Japan's Sakura Genesis from April of 2017 and the highly controversial match between Kazuchika Okada and Katsuyori Shibata. Later this month, we'll go back to October of 1987 with WWF's Saturday Night's main event on NBC, including title matches between Hulk Hogan and Sika, Honky Tonk Man against Randy Savage, and the Hart Foundation facing the Young Stallions. The month rounds out with WWE's Money in the Bank 2011. With CM Punk challenging John Cena for the WWE Championship in Chicago after the pipe bomb promo. Plus, Karen Peterson presents a special show focusing on the Queen of Villains on Netflix, weekly editions of Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course, ad-free shows, news and audio updates sent directly to your email, and so much more beginning at $6 per month, which provides instant 30-day access and extensive archives going back to 2017. PostWrestlingCafe.com. All right, Greg Gutzler joining us. He is a partner at Duccello Levitt, which is one of the firms that is representing the five anonymous ex-WWF ring boys. And I think that gives you a lot of insight just in terms of, you read this complaint, Brandon, and one of the lines is that this is just the tip of the iceberg. And I mean, you just look at a figure like Mel Phillips of how deep this could go beyond just these five, say nothing of other victims that we have known throughout the years that have been attached. The key whistleblower being Tom Cole in 1992.
Yeah. And we're going to talk to his brother Lee Cole later in this broadcast. The FBI document that they show as an excerpt in this complaint does mention 10 victims that the FBI in 1993 identified. There are five John Doe's here raising allegations. Do the math, and there's a Tom Cole, unfortunately, has passed away. But there are presumably more ring boys out there.
Going through this complaint, Brandon, I mean, tell me kind of your own revelations, if you had any, in terms of going through this. Like, a lot of this, first of all, I really applaud the work of Chris Zellner and David Bixenspan. David Bixenspan has done extensive coverage of this story going back years. I think his Business Insider article really put this together in a very coherent way. But, even as someone that I feel like I have a pretty good handle on this story, it's shocking when you are reading the very descriptive language of what is alleged here by these five John Does. Say nothing of the settlement figure that Mel Phillips left the company with in 1992 of approximately $300,000 at a time when, in 1992, $300,000 is not insignificant for WWF's finances given their state in the early 90s.
Yeah, looking at how much that would be in 2023 or 2024 dollars. But that's, I don't know. That might be 14. That can't be right. But anyway, reading through the complaint, like I said before, it's kind of a history of the Ring Boy scandal and how this news broke and who's said what and comments from shoot interviews backing up suspicions of misconduct. And there's about 56 pages of that. I have never seen up to this point, and maybe you've definitely seen things related to this story that I haven't. I've never seen specific allegations of abuse about what exactly Mel Phillips did. Not that I necessarily doubt that he did some really horrible things, but we've lacked the really substantive descriptions about what he did. And then you get to about page 56 of this and each John Doe has his own heading describing what exactly Mel Phillips did. And it's an experience similar to reading the Janelle Grant complaint earlier this year, which was filed in January, as far as some really graphic and horrible descriptions of in this case, child sex abuse.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where over the years, when you have seen kind of the description of Mel Phillips, I feel it's somewhat been sanitized to foot fetish. And as I was talking to David Bixenspan last night, that it is almost like handled as like this weird quirk of this guy rather than what it was, which was sexual abuse. When you have the description of taking children's feet and rubbing them against his crotch. And that is, and it gets far worse and far darker than that, in these descriptions as well.
And that'll probably be, up to this point, I mean, we're talking about up through the early 90s when this was becoming a public story, that has been the defense of Vince and Linda, to say that, well, people knew that there was a foot fetish here, and this guy was maybe a weird guy. And yeah, he was hanging around with kids a lot, but did they have knowledge of the abuse is what will be probably one of the key issues here. Is this a good time to read through the Mushnick, deposition excerpts that we have, if I could bring those up here, where
to refresh, is in the WWF and, well, Vince McMahon and Linda McMahon, they filed a suit against the New York Post and Phil Mushnick, and then this was a sworn deposition involving Phil Mushnick, and goes into the conversations that Mushnick had with Vince McMahon at the time, and getting into the specifics of, yes, what did Vince McMahon know and what he had told both Phil Mushnick and Vince McMahon on the record in 1992 about Mel Phillips being let go in 1988 and then being brought back approximately 6 weeks later with the provision of steering clear of underage boys and children. So again,
and just to clarify further, so Phil Mushnick had written in a column in the New York Post, Vince McMahon told me that the reason why he fired Mel Phillips in the first place, first in 1988, before 6 weeks later he was brought back, the reason why he was let go in the first place is because he had a peculiar and unnatural relationship with boys. And so that's in a column, and we know the reputation that Phil Mushnick has, at least within the WWF, WWE circle, as somebody who's digging up a lot of dirt about the WWF. He puts that in a newspaper. But here we have a deposition where Phil Mushnick is under oath. So this is not just a newspaper column, but this is Phil Mushnick making statements under the penalty of perjury.
All right. I'll read Mushnick's part
and I'll be Jeremy McDivitt.
Yeah, you prosecute me.
Okay. You have not indicated in your answer. Well, let's skip ahead to, all right, fine. I just want to make sure I have everything you remember about that conversation. This is McDivitt referring to the conversation that Phil Mushnikad with Vince McMahon.
McMahon told me that it was his great regard for children, his own personal regard for children, that made him get rid of Mel Phillips, because he felt Mel Phillips was peculiarly and unnaturally attracted to children and traveled around with underage children. And that's why he fired Mel Phillips. And I believe he said two or perhaps a couple of years later, he brought back Mel Phillips out of the goodness of his heart with the proviso that he steer clear of underage boys and children. Now, that is what he stated at the time. We have, like, again, David Bixenspan has gone back and, like, checked with the episodes at the time that there appears to be a 6-week window that Mel Phillips disappears and then reappears. So that it seems like it was not a matter of years, but rather weeks.
And they're taping TV about every 3 weeks at the time, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Go on.
Oh, right.
Mushnick here.
And I said, well, what about Jerry Mallette? And he said, oh yeah, Jerry Mallette. Jerry. He said that Jerry's got a, he indicated or said flat out that Jerry has his parents' permission to travel around the country with Mel Phillips.
Okay. And before we go further, so Jerry Mallette is another ring boy. Well, we looked into whether we should redact his name, but he has told his story publicly. And I think we'll probably even play a clip from Jerry Mallette, his side of the story. He's someone who defends Mel Phillips, but we'll go on. Here's Jerry McDivitt saying, is there anything else you can remember?
Not at this time.
Did he tell you what Mel Phillips said when he was let go?
Not that I recall.
Did he, referring to Vince, tell you whether Mel Phillips indicated to him that he had been doing nothing improperly sexually with any kid?
Not that I recall.
Did you know the age of Jerry Mallette at the time you had this phone call with Mr. McMahon?
No.
If Mr. Mallette is over 18 years old and traveling around with Mel Phillips in a consensual relationship of any kind, do you have a problem with that? And Mushnick's lawyer, Mr. Jackson, objects and says it's irrelevant if he has a problem with it.
And Mushnick says, I have a problem with it. It's my understanding that Jerry Mallette is an intellectually, he's been described to me by several people as extremely slow.
Yeah. Well, I listened to a couple interviews. Well, a long interview that Jerry Mallette did in late August. And he seems like a fairly normal person as far as intellectually, whether or not he was slow or something like that. I don't know. But should we might as well just play that, that clip from Jerry Mallette in an interview that he did, on August 30th is the date where he's being asked pretty specifically whether he believes that, Mel Phillips was up to any wrongdoing.
No, given your friendship with Mel, your age when you started and the number of years it spanned, it would be extremely difficult to put yourself in a headspace to consider he may have had a side you didn't know about. Nobody wants to see someone they know and admire as a bad person or having a dark side. But when you take a step back and look at everything, the accounts of other ring attendants, wrestlers, John Arezzi, the documentation from the FBI that stated Mel's behavior was consistent with that of child predators, Vince's own comments that he previously let Mel go due to his odd nature of his relationship with children, is there ever a moment where you think, wow, maybe something happened?
In 15 years of knowing that man, I never saw any criminal activity. Now, does he do some strange and unusual things because he had the little perks? Absolutely. Who doesn't have their little perks? But when it comes to doing something strange and unusual when it came to kids, no.
So that was Jerry Mallette, on the Monty and the Pharaoh show, describing what he, at least his perspective regarding Mel Phillips as well. So we may revisit that interview later on. But we do want to move on to our next guest who is going to be joining us. He is the older brother of the late Tom Cole, who was one of the key whistleblowers in 1992 that really led to charge that I think led to, you know, what we saw on Wednesday in terms of this filing. Lee Cole is joining us from the Wrestling with the Devil YouTube channel. Lee, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Lee.
Yeah, how you doing? And I apologize. I'm in the car and I can't figure out my browser to show my face. Maybe that's a good thing.
No, as long as we can hear you, you're coming in perfectly clear.
Are you wearing a Yankees hat?
I sure am. That's why I wanted to show my face. I got my Yankee hat on. I got my gear on. I even went out and bought a nice shirt that fits me, a Yankee shirt.
Okay.
It's a big thing.
It all goes down Friday night, game one.
Yes, it does.
Well, Lee, I mean, this has been a long road to Wednesday's filing, and I just want to ask you off the top, you know, a day removed from this lawsuit finally coming out, and probably a lot of people either learning about the Ring Boy scandal for the first time or truly understanding like how dark this gets. For you, just when this finally got filed, were you? I'm sure you've been just a roller coaster of emotions when it comes to this story that is so intrinsically tied to you and your family.
Yeah, the biggest thing is that we always knew it was very dark, but people didn't want to accept that part. And I guess with the eyewitnesses coming forward now and telling their stories, you know, the big thing is, oh, Lee Cole's behind us. Lee Cole's gotten people to do this and that. Well, the reality is this: Lee Cole did not get five people to come forward and tell their story about what happened with Mel Phillips. These are men that had their stories. They've been holding them in. Sure, you can open the door for people, but they still have to tell their stories. And it's one thing Tom used to always say: they could say whatever they want to me, but in the end, they can never say I wasn't telling the truth.
And going back to 1992, tell me when you first learn of Mel Phillips and the context of which who he was described to you. And for context, like your brother Tom, he worked at the WWF. I hope I have my dates right here, between 1985 and 1990, which is when he is propositioned by Terry Garvin and is let go by the company, and then comes back in 1992. So my understanding would be around 1992 is when you first hear of what went down with Tom.
Well, I was in Utica, and Tom was a street guy, and sometimes he needed a place to lay his head, and he came in, and I remember talking to him. I said, Tom, why don't you talk to me about wrestling anymore? And because Tom was always talking about wrestling, he was always happy about wrestling, and he was kind of depressed. And then he sat down, and it's like a couple of days he didn't want to tell me, and then he sat down and started telling me the story. And when he told me the story, I was shocked, angry, and that's where it started. It started right there in that house on Knox Street in Utica.
And your response to him was what? Like, what did you take from that? Like, this is your younger brother, and you see that this trauma that he has clearly gone through. Is it immediate that you feel this needs to be known? What are the channels you seek out to get this?
Well, the reality is that Phil Muchnick did a story. And you know, it's kind of funny now. These guys are blaming, you know, Phil Muchnick. They had this clown attack him the other day on the show. You know, the fact of the matter is, I'm going to tell you something right now. And I don't, if people don't know Phil Muchnick is a damn good man. Phil Muchnick has put this stuff out there back in the, back during the times when nobody wanted to hear it. And wrestlers that are attacking Phil Muchnick, what they need to remember is Phil Muchnick is the one that came out and said, wait a minute, these guys are independent contractors. Wait a minute, these guys don't have insurance. Wait a minute, these guys are being sexually abused by Pat Patterson, and they can't go to work, and they're being harassed by Patterson or Garvin. Instead, you have these wrestlers that are around now, especially the ones with the show, that still want to kiss Vince McMahon's ass, not realizing what Phil Muchnick did for them. He's the one that opened the door. Phil Muchnick and my brother, those were the originals. Those are the two guys that opened this door.
When you kind of going through the lawsuit, Lee, and I'm sure like you are on top of this as much as anyone, like just the fact that a lot of the public is seeing the allegations in gruesome detail outlined, I'm sure this is stuff that, you know, privately people have confided in you of what they have gone through. And I'm kind of curious just what you have made of the reaction to this suit in the past 24 hours, and why you feel it's going to be handled differently today versus three decades ago, where it just felt the public and the media really did not know how to cover the story.
Well, and just to be fair to the media, back then, Well, my brother decided to go back to work because he was misrepresented by his lawyer during the meetings. There was a stack of shows on the table. I remember the lawyer saying to me, look at this. All these people want Tom on. What Tom should have done when Vince McMahon got up in that meeting and threatened to walk out, Tom's lawyer should have said, well, we'll see you on TV tomorrow. But he didn't do that. And so at that moment, you know, people were in the room with Vince, Linda McMahon and Jerry McDivitt, overwhelming figures. It was this small, it was this city lawyer living off his father's name. He was a horrible lawyer. And this whole thing started with a small town lawyer. And these lawyers that are, you got now, this is what they do. They specialize in sexual abuse victims. They have money to back them. Vince McMahon cannot outspend them like he has done. That's what he did with Munchnik. He got it squashed for 2 years. Munchnik couldn't talk, and he used money to squash this. If he doesn't shut down Munchnik back then, it would have got a lot worse. But Jerry McDivitt was a brilliant lawyer and knew exactly what to do, and they shut up and they shut up Munchnik.
Yeah, and you're referring to the lawsuit. We understand there's a letter that Tom Cole's lawyer sends to WWE with this basically a draft of a complaint, but that lawsuit ends up not getting filed, correct?
Made. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes. We can hear you.
Yeah, there were so many mistakes made. I mean, back then, you know, we were a couple of street kids, and we didn't know what we were stepping into or how powerful these people were. You know, it's like the mistakes made back then were incredible, and if it was done at a different time, or maybe I was a little bit more clever or smarter, a lot of things would not have happened. But, you know, the first time I seen Vince McMahon, you know, you see this figure and you say, oh, look at him. He's an impressive guy. And for 2 days, he bullshits me. The third day, we're at each other's throat. But it's really tough. It's like once you know things now, that, you know, you ever hear that saying, if I knew then what I know now, mm-hmm. But unfortunately I don't. There were so many mistakes made by everybody involved in this. Tom, me, Phil Munchnik, and they were going up against Jerry McDivitt, who's a brilliant lawyer.
Would it be fair to characterize, Lee, that when you and your brother are brought to Titan Towers, are you sort of viewed by them as the obstacle here to get to Tom? And
yeah, what happened is they kept me out of the meeting when they first came into New York. They kept me out of that meeting, and then right after the meeting, Tom told Vince, my brother is involved in this. And so Vince says, oh, your brother. And so at that time they decided to invite me to the Phil Donahue show, and that's where I originally met Vince McMahon. And 2 days, I thought he was a great guy until he broke into my answering machine and did some things when I was sitting there. And as people know, back then I had a felony warrant out for my arrest. So I was like on the edge of my seat. I'm like, damn, man, if these guys find out I have a felony warrant, they're going to have me arrested. And they eventually had me arrested anyway, and it backfired on them. But, you know, it's like I said, it's all these crazy things going on. And when Vince knew there was somebody else, sure, it bothered him. Because I remember when Vince went into the answering machine, then he told me, he looked at me and he said to me, oh, you're a smart one, aren't you? But he said it sarcastically. I always remember his face, the way he frowned when he said it to me. That was just Vince, I guess.
And Lee, in the last almost year or so, you've been doing a lot of work on your YouTube channel, and you've had former Ring Boys on your YouTube channel to talk with you, which was the first time that these people were talking in public. Do you think that had any role in causing this lawsuit to come about, or do you have any involvement in helping getting this going?
Well, I'm not going to talk about that right now, unfortunately, because whatever they decide to do somewhere along the line, they're going to blame me for it. But the fact of the matter is these boys came forward. They told the truth. They're telling the truth. I had one Ring Boy on, and they came to me, you know, they sent me emails and they told me that their stories, and that's it, you know. And I just operated as a show. I had nothing to do with the lawsuit.
When people have come forward to you, Lee, I mean, it's like this is obviously very traumatic for them, and I'm just kind of curious for you, how you're able to convey to them like a certain level of like, I think for a lot of these victims, it's simply people believing them and that concern of coming forward and all that comes with it. Like, I'm sure these people are going to be smeared, and you were at least able to instill with them, like, you can trust me by sharing your story. And they obviously had that confidence in you.
Yes. And you know something, and we get back to the smearing part. I seen some shows last night. They should be ashamed of themselves. One guy said that he had a child, and then he started making fun of what happened to the Ring Boys along with his audience. These are avid wrestling fans that think the world is based on some kind of play, you know, and or whatever they call it in wrestling. And I think the one good thing about me and being involved in this is I like wrestling, but I'm not some avid wrestling fan. I never looked at this as like an avid wrestling fan thing. I looked at this as like pedophiles being allowed in the company by the owner, by the two owners. And they knew that they were pedophiles, and they never did anything to stop it. Until the only reason they ever stopped it was because Tom's lawsuit came out. And another thing that bothers me is the fact that I was watching Dave Meltzer. Dave Meltzer did a show today, and once again, he's talking about this. Well, Dave, every time that a story comes out on this, you jump on the bandwagon. Why? You know, here's a guy that had a lot of over the years. He's pretty big in the wrestling world. The only time he ever talked about it is when it got out there. And this is the problem. We have very few David Bixson fans, and David Bixson's fans. And I'm just going to say this: he's a credit to people that are investigators. He investigated it for a long time. And if everybody else in the wrestling world, instead of being wrestling fans, especially you, Dave Meltzer, were investigators, this would have turned out a lot different.
I will say that, like, with Dave Meltzer, I mean, Tom Cole did appear on his show several times, and I'm kind of curious as well of what you observe through Tom over the last number of years. Like, how much did he stay connected to wrestling? And like, was it something that that you observed was something he continued to battle, these horrific experiences that he underwent?
It got worse as he got older, just like some of these Ring Boys that have come out. You know, you're a man, you're growing up, and Tom created a family. He became a bodyguard, had a great job. But you know something, when you suffer things that through molestation as a child, whether you're a man or a woman, it lives in you forever. And anybody that's out there that's a victim of molestation, I'm sure they know what I'm talking about. People act like, you know, why are these guys coming forward now? Well, because one, they were raising families. They didn't want their children to know. Men have a machismo about them, and they don't want people to know that this happened to them when they were children. And some of these men are very tough men that you would not mess with on the street. These are street guys. These are street kids. They were street kids that were taken advantage of by Mel. And my brother stayed close to wrestling until probably as his daughters were born, and then he kind of started getting away from it. But toward the end of his life, between his brain tumor in the last year and a half, it bothered him more than ever. And he started talking about it a lot. Like, he got a hold of, you know, he spoke to Dave a couple times. He spoke to a few people in the wrestling world. And then when the Pat Patterson came out, and it came out that Pat Patterson did a show where he said he was gay, and they were praising him and everything. But everybody always knew Pat Patterson was gay. That was not new. It was just another work. And that really bothered Tom, because Tom knew all the things that Pat Patterson was doing. And to this day, Pat Patterson still gets a pass because people don't want to believe what he did, even though we have like maybe 30, 40 people that said he did this stuff.
Including the Netflix documentary, Tony Atlas raises an allegation of being groped by Pat Patterson. Would you tell for our audience, you know, you've said it many times publicly, but our audience might not have heard it, your conversations with Tom about, you know, about getting justice basically for, you know, the alleged abuse?
Well, the last day my brother was alive, and I got texts too. I put texts up on my show to show it. He sent me texts originally, and then I was concerned about him, and I called him, and we were talking on the phone for about 2 hours. And he told me, he said, Lee, let everybody know what these people did to me. And I remember saying to him, and I got the proof in the text too. I said to him in the text, Tom, what more can we do? No one's listening no more. And Tom said to me, he says, Lee, if I know you, and if you keep it up, I know that something will happen. And I never thought anything was going to happen. When I came onto YouTube, I went into the mob genre. I had built a successful show there. And the reason I came back here was because of Janelle Grant. Janelle Grant's show came out. He was being abused by so many people. You know, right away, they don't want to believe her. They'll say, oh, she took the money and all that stuff. But they don't understand what being a victim is. And every victim acts different. And the reason I came back to this was because of Janelle Grant. Vince's biggest mistake, and Vince, I don't know if you listen to this, but that woman was the biggest mistake you ever made. You know, he got greedy, he got stupid, and he just opened up the door. Vince self-destructed. And now it's only going to get worse. I'm sure more ring boys are coming forward. And believe me, I know they're coming forward. His own worst enemy brought himself down. And we have to thank Janelle Grant for opening that door. No matter what people think of Janelle Grant, she's responsible for opening this door.
Can you tell us a bit about whether your direct dealings, or especially with Tom's, in regards to Linda McMahon and why she is included as a defendant in this as well?
Linda McMahon is the master of the cover-up. What Vince did is Vince walked out of the boardroom that very last day when everybody was meeting there, and he said, Linda, take over. Linda took over. Linda was in charge of my brother. Linda was in charge of covering up the Ring Boy scandal. Linda was in charge of going out and finding people. She was part of it, just like she was part of so many other cover-ups. You know, and then it went to the daughter, Stephanie, covering up for Ashley Massaro. You know, this is what they've done over the years. You know what gets me? This company has done and damaged and hurt so many people. And it takes this lawsuit to open up some eyes. And it's always been out there. This should have been stopped years ago. It's like I said, the feds dropped the ball in 1992 because Mel went out and was telling the kids, hey, the feds are involved in this. Please do. If they come talking to you, don't mention anything. And one of the victims had all these pictures. He had a videotape. And if the FBI went and questioned him in 1992, they would have been able to bust open the whole entire Ring Boy scandal back then. But they dropped the ball. And these are the little stories along the line of who dropped the ball here.
It really seems like they were, for some reason, not interested in pursuing allegations of sexual abuse against children, and instead went for the steroid scandal. Yes. And the steroid distribution claims, which seem a lot weaker. But yeah.
Yeah. And and you know, the funny thing is all they had to do was go look for those kids, and they didn't. You know, I had one of the Ring Boys tell me, he goes, Lee, I had everything. I had the pictures. I had everything. If they came and knocked on my door and they said, oh, we want to see these, do you think that young man was going to say no to the FBI? No. And but you know what? I'm being in the mob genre. One thing I learned about the feds, they dropped the ball on a lot of things.
When it comes to, you know, Ring Boys you have been in contact with, and you don't have to be specific at all, of course, do you see, like, are NDAs part of a reason that some of these Ring Boys can't come forward? Like, is that sort of in the strategy of making these stories go away?
Well, one thing we learned over the years, NDAs mean nothing. They're useless. You know, Vince McMahon tried to make them mean something. They really don't mean anything. Anybody can break an NDA. And if someone breaks an NDA, and you're not going to go after them, because if you go after them, then they're going to talk about why they got their mouth shut. And that's the whole thing going on right now with the Janelle Grant thing and and that fielding court. So you know, they may try it. They wanted me to sign one in 92, and I told Vince to go to hell when he wanted me to sign one right there in the office. There was no way I was going to do that because that meant I couldn't talk about anything. But people do sign them, and people give them a lot more power than they are. They really don't have no power.
What are you looking for, Lee, that hopefully is the outcome here? Like, what are you seeking? Is this a labor of love for your brother? Is this just justice for these ring boys and ultimately responsibility being laid at those that allowed this to go unchecked for all these years?
Oh, well, you know something, you have people who have emotionally are a wreck, mm-hmm. you know, people whose lives went in different directions because of what happened to them because of the WWE. And it happened to them because it, you know, people say, oh, why the new one is, why is TKO being sued? Because one, TKO merged and they took that entity of the WWE. And here's what people seem to forget, which is amazing. TKO, when you make a merger, a multi-billion-dollar merger, the first thing you do is send in all your investigators and you see everything. They knew about all these things being signed by that, you know, Vince buying everybody off in 22. They knew about it. And then they came in and 7 days later, Vince is gone. So it's obvious they knew. So they're not an innocent victim in this. They're, you know, they knew exactly what was going on when they purchased the company. So you know what? This becomes part of the company. Welcome to the WWE. You just merged with it. So now you got to take on all their problems. That's what people have to understand. I'm figuring this is most likely why TKO has been put into this lawsuit.
I would think if nothing else, they're the parent company of WWE. These allegations,
yeah.
these allegations exactly. happened at the WF's venues, happened in the course of Mel Phillips hiring ring boys. So it was part of the business.
And it's going to be interesting to see if the WWE, if they're smart, what they would do is they would say, look, we're trying to move on in this world. We don't want no part of this man. We know this man did all this. We know his wife was involved in this. We want to part from all this and do the right thing. That would be the smartest thing. But nobody knows what anybody's going to do in the middle of a lawsuit. Now, this is going to wind up between a bunch of lawyers negotiating and everything. I hope that these kids get taken care. Well, these former children get taken care of for the suffering that they've gone through in their life and the horrible. You know, you guys, you read some of that horrible stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody always thought this is about foot on crotch. And, you know, this was about a guy using a foot to get it to the crotch. And that's what it was about. And Mel was doing so. I believe that Mel Phillips may have been the most prolific pedophile in the history of this country. That is what I believe. I believe that he used the WWE and championship belts and all that stuff as props and carrots to lure these victims in. And I believe by the time this is all over, we are going to all learn what a prolific pedophile this man was. And more people come through, the doors are going to open up wider and everybody's going to learn about Mel Phillips and why the hell did Vince and Linda let that man, what did this guy have on Vince? This guy had something on Vince McMahon. Mel Phillips was released for 6 weeks in 1988, 6 weeks. And then Vince brought him back and said, stay away from the boys.
That's what hits me so much in this lawsuit, Lee, is that you see this pattern of Mel that would literally just like drive into these neighborhoods and strike up conversations with children. And like, we don't hear too much about Mel Phillips post 1992, but that's 20 years after the fact. Like, here was a guy that had a black book with children from all areas of the country, that had access to video recording equipment. I mean, I I don't dismiss your theory, like, of how deep this goes, and that line in the suit about this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah,
and part of this complaint, it describes, it's almost like the stereotype of the guy driving around in the creepy van, like, but he's got championship belts to lure the
kids. Yeah, and he rents cars, he rents vans. I found out so much about this man in the last year; it's incredible. You know, you got to remember though, this is the man that went on flights and took these boys out of the country. What else did he do things to boys out of the country? He spent a lot of time in Hawaii. He spent a lot of time in England. What went on there?
And then the advent of the internet, like, who knows what was like with that tool at your disposal? Like, again, he's alive till 2012. Like God knows what was, what we don't know. That's what I come to a conclusion asking.
Yeah, and it's a sad story. It's very sad because now the families are finding out things. You know, these guys have said, look, this happened to me. And they're like, wow, you know, this happened to you? You know, you've seen that picture of Mel laying on top of a boy. Mm-hmm. Now that boy's 13 years old. And then you'll have morons in here go, but they were wrestling. Okay, so you had a 40-year-old man laying on top of a 13-year-old boy wrestling? Is that what you're going to say he was doing? Are you that stupid? And unfortunately, you do have a lot of stupid people in the wrestling genre.
And I think just being as brazen as it's outlined, that this was not as though this was only happening behind closed doors. Like, he had no shame in terms of, you know, wrestling with these boys in plain view of the wrestlers, of Pat Patterson.
All of them.
And it was almost as though, like, you're creating this culture that, like, this is normalized. Like, that's just Mel Phillips. This is this weird quirk he has. And you're observing, like, abuse, like, right in front of your eyes.
Yeah, it's like Jesse Ventura walked up to my brother Tom and said, be careful of that man. Mm-hmm. You know, and then people will say, oh, but why didn't they step forward? And, you know, that is a good question, to be fair. But at that time, these are guys that most of these guys didn't have a pot to piss in. They were making $20 to do a wrestling show, and they didn't want to be blackballed. Bruno can come forward because he's Bruno. But, you know, look what they did to Bruno in the end. He came back at the end only because of Triple H. But what they did to him at the end of his, you know, that's another thing, too, which gets me. Has Vince McMahon ever been loyal to anybody that's ever made him a lot of money? Bruno, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, just about everybody that's made him a lot of money, he's done something really bad to. So if he does bad things to those people, what makes you think that he's not going to do bad things to people that mean nothing to him?
Yeah, I'd also add, like, just like studying a lot on this is that a common trait you hear from a lot of, like, victims of sexual abuse is that as traumatizing as the actual abuse is, for some, it is as traumatic to come forward and not to be believed either. And
yes,
that turns a lot of people off from going public. So I encourage everyone to remember that of people that really have very little to gain by coming forward and putting themselves in the public discourse and knowing what is going to come their way. It's a real ugly side of these stories, and that's very traumatic for these people too.
And I could tell everybody here, I get attacked all the time in here. I get attacked by wrestlers. I get attacked by people. You had to see some of these chats, what they said about me last night, saying that I put this. Who the fuck am I? Excuse my language. I'm sorry. Who the hell am I? You know, seriously, who am I? I'm just a guy with a show. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not at the level of these guys. What do you think? Lawyers are going to magically take? You think these guys are going to spend all this money and take on a multi-billion four people, four entities worth $1 billion? No, they're going to do it only if they think they're in the right. And they are in the right. They know they have the right. Like, you see a couple pictures. What do you think? That's, they only got a couple pictures? It's like, oh, wait till we get to court. We'll show you the juicy ones, you know? And it's like, okay, what do you think? That there's no videos around? It's a funny thing. And they're all going to think about that. I'm sure you guys have just seen the tip of the iceberg and not the iceberg.
Yeah, Lee has seen much more of the iceberg, I think, than most. Lee, we'll end it off on this. Is, and I know this is probably a difficult question, but if you can imagine how Tom would have felt today with this coming forward, can you put yourself into that headspace of how he would feel? Because I'm sure he was very dissuaded over the years that this sort of was, you know, a horrific part of WWE's history that they navigated themselves out of, and almost just it became this part of history that enough people moved on from and didn't reflect enough upon.
Well, it's unfortunate. Sometimes in the history of the world, people have to die in order for things to get accomplished. And my brother died. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so did other people, Ashley Massaro, and horrible, you know, committing suicide. And I think about it because Ashley Massaro and Tom and Janelle Grant are all part of this club where they were abused, called liars. They were always liars. And it's because of those people that were here that we are now. You know, I'm just a small part of this. Those guys were the big parts. And those are the people everybody should look up to, especially those three people. Tom Cole, Ashley Massaro, and Janelle Grant, to me, are the heroes in this.
And for those that are listening as well, maybe learning about this story, tell us where we can hear more. I'm sure you're going to be covering this very in depth over the next days and weeks, and where can we follow you.
I got a show dropping on Dave Meltzer today. I'm sorry, Dave, but I had no choice. And you're going to get a lot of people doing stories on this, but then you're going to get the guys that I call them the bandwagon guys, are jumping on riding people's coattails. It's nothing wrong with doing that, but report on the story and report the truth, you know, and that's what separates David Bixen's band from 90% of the guys in here reporting on this. You know, it's like, there's a lot of stuff out there, guys. If you go look for it, you'll find it. If a little shit, uneducated shit like me can do it, you sure the hell can do it, guys. I'm not talking to you guys. I know you guys are always on it. But you know, everybody should do their job and look, you know, talk to people. Don't assume that Pat Patterson's innocent because people like him. That's basically what I would say about this.
Well, Lee, we thank you for joining us. You've been following this, you know, for decades at this point. We appreciate you joining us, and we will be continuing to follow this story. And we thank you very much for jumping on and being generous with your time today.
Oh, good job, guys. You guys always put out the facts, and you talk to both sides, and I'm sure you guys are going to see this is going to get quite uglier, and I'm sure they're going to come after certain people pretty soon. So let's do it.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Lee. We'll talk soon. Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Lee Cole joining us, the older brother of the late Tom Cole. And Brandon, we haven't really had a chance to talk about this on the show yet, but you know, with all the attention that the Mr. McMahon series received, there is another documentary that is in the works, looking at several of these stories, including the Ring Boy scandal, that is going to, we don't know when it is coming out, but it is worth noting, like, there is another documentary series that is in development that I think will dive into a lot of this stuff and hearing from victims as well.
Yeah, we do have permission to say that there is another Vince McMahon documentary that's being worked on. Not complete yet, and certainly no release date or more information that we can say at this time, but there's another documentary being worked on.
We can circle back to the complaint as we start to wind things down. I think it's worth like going through just a couple of these. We're not going to read verbatim everything here, but I do think it's important to kind of highlight what is alleged here by the five John Does. Number one is that these five anonymous ex-ring boys range in ages of when the abuse occurred between 13 and 15 years old. John Doe 1 was 13 years old. This was around 1981, 82. And for the time frame, four alleged that the incidents happened in around 1981 to 1985. And then one, the fifth John Doe, stated his abuse occurred in 1989, which is noteworthy that in 1989.
Beyond 88.
Exactly. This would have been after Mel Phillips was brought back. So John Doe 1 states that he was groomed and that Phillips groped his genitals and would play it off as a mistake, cites approximately 7 or 8 incidents over a 12 to 18 month period, and was given money by Mel Phillips and told not to tell his parents about what occurred. John Doe 2 was 13 years old when he met Mel Phillips outside of an arena in Massachusetts in 1984, would have his feet grabbed and fondled, would touch his buttocks, and was videotaped with this abuse occurring. John Doe number 3 was living in a foster home in Pennsylvania when he met Phillips in the early 80s and would drive him to shows in Hamburg, Pennsylvania, would rub his genitals on his legs and feet, wrestled him to the ground in his underwear, and would grind against John Doe number 3 until having an orgasm. There was also an incident he outlined of being given a soda that didn't taste like soda and then felt lightheaded afterward as a precursor to further sexual abuse. John Doe number 4 met Phillips when he was 13 years old between 1983 and 1985 after Phillips drove around their neighborhood in Pennsylvania and struck up a conversation. A witness says that a group of boys would leave with Phillips and come back drunk and got John Doe 4 drunk after a show in Landover, Maryland, taking them to a motel where they were served alcohol, and then Phillips bringing John Doe 4 into a shower under the guise of cleaning him up, but then forcibly touched his genitals and was guiding John Doe 4's hand towards his penis to masturbate him and attempted to rape him. John Doe 4 and his friends worked as part of the ring crew on approximately 6 to 7 shows at the Philadelphia Spectrum, using their feet to touch his genitals, and did this in front of other wrestlers, and noted Pat Patterson being one who would have seen this. And then John Doe number 5, which again occurred, he was approximately 15 years old when he met Phillips around 1983, 1984 in Philadelphia after the announcer again drove through his neighborhood showing off WWE props such as championship belts, and the abuse started on a trip to Landover, Maryland. The Rolling Stone article that I encourage people to go read by David Bixenspan goes into a lot of this and also provides a historical context as well through a lot of original reporting from Bixenspan, from Freedom of Information Act requests. And this is sort of a follow-up to his 2020 article for Business Insider. And I think this is kind of the best contextual feature that is out there that kind of puts all of this into its rightful place and where all of this kind of lines up in the chronology that I know, Brandon, you've also put together a bit of a timeline too for people to follow.
Right. On Post Wrestling, we have an article that I did with the comments from people who've given us comments, but also I basically just put in big block quotes, all of the descriptions of abuse that these people who are men now, but are boys at the time, were subjected to according to them. You can read that for yourself. I think it is, you know, if it's something that you can read, it's really important to read that to understand exactly what they're saying happened to them. I think it's important in the way that we felt that, you know, read the complaint that was written by Janelle Grant's attorneys to understand what exactly they're alleging, because these are really horrible descriptions of abuse that they're saying they were subjected to.
We're also going to play a pair of clips here. This was Tom Cole being interviewed on Wrestling Observer Live in 2004 by Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez. And I thought it would be important to hear Tom Cole's voice on this day. And this first one is Tom Cole speaking about Mel Phillips and Terry Garvin. Again, this was in 2004, 20 years ago.
Thank God that Vince and Linda McMahon did, regardless of what kind of gesture they were making or weren't making, did get rid of Terry Garvin and Mel Phillips, because that was the most important thing to do. I mean, right there, that saved a lot. Mel Phillips, in my opinion, is no doubt still doing what he used to do, but he's not doing it to the degree that he once was able to. And they took that away from him, and thank God that they did. And I realize that now as I'm in the world, and you see how things work, and you see how, you know, the money and power, the craziest things happen when you combine those two, because you get everything you want, and no one ever says no to you. And I think it's everywhere. I don't think it's just wrestling. I think it's everywhere.
So that was Tom Cole in 2004. That would have been 8 years before Mel Phillips died. And I mean, through the years, I mean, Tom Cole, he certainly did have an affinity for Linda McMahon. It did seem like there was a, whatever it was, like there was a faith that he did have in Linda McMahon, that did come out of that, you know, horrible period for him as well. But again, it's putting into context too the idea that, okay, Mel Phillips was ultimately let go in 1992. But there were years there that I think could have saved a lot of kids as well from undergoing any further abuse after that 1988 period, say nothing of, you know, the prior decade that he was able to, you know, go through with all of this abuse.
Yeah. People are asking where they can find the complaint. It is linked in the article on Post Wrestling. I've also put the link to the complaint itself in all of the chats that people are connected to here. And if you're just looking for the specific excerpts that are the new allegations, the complaint does go through a detailed history of how this scandal broke and who has said what about it. But if you're just looking for the descriptions of assaults that the Ring Boys have alleged, that is in the article on postwrestling.com.
And this other clip from Tom Cole is from the same interview. And when the Nicole Bass trial took place in 2003, like Tom Cole was still following the industry, and he actually went to the court when that trial was taking place, and he did get to have a conversation with Linda McMahon, and he kind of explains why he went there and what he wanted to be able to convey to the McMahons.
You know, my big thing was I thought, you know, after everything that happened to me, I wanted them to see that I made it, you know, that I didn't depend on them or anybody else to help me along, you know, after they got rid of me. And it was some, I don't know what it was, but I just wanted to say, look at me, you know, I didn't fall off the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. I became something, I made something of my life, you know, I didn't take a free ride anywhere. And so that's one of the reasons I went there. And I talked to Linda in the hallway briefly, you know, and I told her, you know, I part of me wants to believe that your husband never knew anything about it, because I didn't realize, you know, when he came out in his story, Vince, of all that happened to him, that he was...
Oh, when Vince was child, yeah.
Yeah, abused. And I didn't know a lot of that stuff. And I want to believe, you know, that somebody that went through something like that, such as I did, wouldn't allow it to happen to somebody else, because I know I wouldn't. And that's why I'm coming out about, you know, the Rob Feinstein thing, because, you know, I'm associated in a sense with wrestling, and you know, I follow it a lot, and if I could do anything to make save any kid from having to go through anything, I would do it.
So again, that was Tom Cole in...
And that's 2005?
2004.
He's mentioning 4, okay. He's yeah. mentioning Rob Feinstein. That was 2004 that story
yeah.
was happening.
Yeah,
okay.
This would have been shortly after the Rob Feinstein story had happened. All right. And one final thing we're going to go back to is that as much as Mel Phillips is brought up here, one person who actually knew Mel Phillips before being aware of all of these allegations was John Arezzi, who's been on this show. And I spoke to a number of years ago when his book first came out, and he spoke about first meeting Mel Phillips in the 70s and being able to, you know, kind of share his own observations of Phillips.
Yeah, Mel, I met him in 1974 at the Wrestling Fans International Association annual meeting and awards banquet. And he was a fan of the year that year. The same year I won Freddie Blassie Fan Club of the Year, when I ran the Freddie Blassie Fan Club, rather. And Mel and I got to know each other. And there were always little hints that there was something amiss with this guy. And so I was really careful, because my intuition was telling me to kind of shy away from him in some ways. And then when all this stuff happened, and when Tom Cole came out and made the allegations, and Mel's name was attached to it, obviously, I mean, it was something that I had to cover. I mean, and I did my best to cover it fairly. But Mel's name kind of lives in infamy to this day. And even though he's no longer with us, I believe he passed away in 2012. And he got quite a settlement from the WWF when he left. I mean, I wasn't even aware of it until recently. And that was for a guy that they claimed was an occasional laborer.
And the settlement, $300,000 in 1992 money in 2024 is now almost $700,000, $674,000 in today's money.
Yeah, which, I mean, when you look at 1992, I mean, how many WWF wrestlers were probably taking in $300,000? Like, you know, your top end guys, yes, but not across the board. You didn't have like six figure wrestlers, up and down in 1992 at a very low point in the company's business. You know, as we kind of wrap this up, and you know, we are going to continue to be talking about this suit, I'm sure, for quite some time. Like, it does put into perspective that when we take these five anonymous ex WWF ring boys and then the other, ring boys that we have knowledge of, Tom Cole, who had come forward in 1992, along with Chris Los to the San Diego Union Tribune. We have a suit that was filed in 1999 by another ring boy as well, that the belief is that there was a settlement. And
that's what Bick said last night with you. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, appears like when contacted would not be able to talk about that. This was when Bix and Span was working on his Business Insider article back in 2020. And again, this is, I think, as it's outlined in the complaint, it's only scratching the surface. And I think if you have any takeaway from Lee Cole, who is, I mean, as closely attached to this story as anyone, the volume that this really does encompass. And I don't think he says that with any hyperbole of like the depths of what Mel Phillips, you know, the atrocities of how widespread it could be, that this is only the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. And like in some ways, it's, as far as knowledge, this is what the plaintiffs are alleging, that Vince and Linda and the company are responsible because they had knowledge of the abuse that, that Mel Phillips was subjecting, young boys to, allegedly. It's in some ways it's different. In some ways it's similar to the allegations against Vince, and in the Grant complaint, Janelle Grant is raising that a number of WWE executives had knowledge, at least of the relationship. Now, whether or not they had knowledge of the abuse is not alleged, in fact, in the Grant complaint, but it is alleged that they supported this relationship and had knowledge of it, which is, in a sense, a parallel to the scandals of 1992 and the scandals that began in 2022.
And we'll just finish this off. We did get, this statement was issued on behalf of Janelle Grant's representation. The allegations in the Ring Boys lawsuit against WWE are deeply troubling. Vince McMahon made sexual abuse and human trafficking a hallmark of WWE's culture for decades. Survivors like Janelle Grant and other former WWE employees deserve their day in court. All former WWE employees who experienced sexual abuse and harassment should be allowed to tell the truth by having their non-disclosure agreements waived. Ms. Grant stands by all WWE survivors and believes that Mr. McMahon, WWE, and all involved parties must be held accountable. And that quote, along with Jessica Rosenberg, who is representing Vince McMahon, those statements are in Brandon's story up at postwrestling.com if you want to go get a thorough summary of the complaint and reactions from both sides.
Yes. Not the B side. WWE, no, as usual, has not commented on this. It took a lot for them to give one comment on the Grant case, which they did one time, but that is the normal non-response from WWE.
Yeah. I mean, they're like, will they be put in a position where they are able to, be asked about this? I mean, you're kind of limited to, there's not going to be any press conference, I would assume, in Saudi Arabia. I don't think that's going to be an opportunity for anyone to ask any questions. And that would take you to, Vancouver with Survivor Series. These are kind of the limited, as we talk about, these are your only opportunities to get any kind of on the record response. And, we will see if
see if the content creators are interested.
We will find out. All right. Any final thoughts, Brandon, before we wrap this up? I think we've done a pretty good rundown of this. Obviously, we're going to be covering this. We have reached out to multiple people to come on this show. We really appreciate Greg and Lee joining us, and I'm sure we will be, you know, continuing to cover this.
And we have reached out to the Vince McMahon side and invited a representative to come speak with us as well. So if that happens, we will definitely make it happen. but no additional thoughts. Again, I think it's powerful to read these allegations in their original text in the complaint, which again, you can find hyperlinked at postwrestling.com, or you can just find the pertinent excerpts in the same article.
All right. And we had David Bixenspan on Wednesday night. So if you want to listen to that, he was on for about 45 minutes with myself and Wei Ting going over this. Again, you can follow his coverage at rollingstone.com and on the Between the Sheets podcast as well. He's really been at the forefront of this for many years, continuing. And Brandon is back on Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern time. We won't sandwich it in here, but you can tell us all about the brand new TKO.
Yes.
Now encompasses the professional, Bull Riders Association, whatever it is. It's all
PBR, not Pabst Blue Ribbon, but Professional Bull Riders will now be a part of TKO, as well as On Location, which is the VIP live event experience business, as well as IMG, which I don't really remember what IMG is, some sort of talent agency, I think. So those are going to be part of TKO. No longer will it be just WWE and UFC. Endeavor, TKO is basically buying it from Endeavor. So it's Ari Emanuel basically buying it from himself. I'm not clear on whether this makes Endeavor an even greater majority owner of TKO. I'm trying to sort that out, but it doesn't make a big difference. But yeah, that's something I'm trying to figure out. And Sunday, WME is still Endeavor, I know, but it's IME is now going to be part of TKO.
So Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern time, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You can also follow along at postwrestling.com. Again, a thank you to all of our guests for joining us and all of you that tuned in for this special Thursday edition of Pollock and Thurston. My voice held up today. I'm battling a cold, but powered through.
Couldn't tell.
So here we are. There you go. The master of disguise, John Pollock. All right. That's it for us. Thanks to everyone for joining us.